The Senate File 37. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 37, sponsored by Education. Education, Hathaway Scholarship Program 2, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 37, engrossed, Education, Hathaway Scholarship Program 2, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Whitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Committee Chairman Northrop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass, and I furthermore move the Standing Committee Amendment. I can explain the Standing Committee Amendment fairly quickly in that it was actually, we changed a date on line 2, page 3, and also on page 2, line 20, out one more year because the department requested that they have some more time to be able to work on this subject. And then on page 4, we actually are asking that the study include the scholarship or other financial incentives, academic recognition of incentives for teachers and students involved in that, and also dual and concurrent courses. Because what we're trying to do with this bill is in the Hathaway process of going to school, students have taken to taking the easiest classes they can to get the best grades, to get the best Hathaway reward. And so when you have a hard class like pre-calculus or calculus or organic chemistry that's offered in your high school or is offered as dual and concurrent enrollment, students are not enticed into doing those classes, taking those classes, because they get punished. They get punished because they get a lesser grade because it's college, could be a college credit class. It's a harder credit class. And so mom and dad say, you have to get better grades in school. The way you do that is to take easier classes. They take easier classes. They're less prepared to go to college, but they got a good Hathaway reimbursement from the state. So I guess I move the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll ask for the favorable recommendation and ask for the question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 is adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you. So I started to explain the bill and actually forgot about the Standing Committee Amendment. So that's why I stopped and we took it up.
We couldn't find it.
So what the bill does is ask the department on page 2 to look at the GPA and also the beginning of the 18-19 school year has been adapted, and thereafter for determining initial scholarship eligibility shall include a measure to account for academic rigor of high school courses in accordance with the rules and regulation of the department. So there's a number of states out there that instead of having a is 4 or having a 4.0, they have some additional on it. They have some of them that are 5s. And so if you take a hard class, you can actually get a 5 in it instead of a 4.0. And then that works back into your average, and that's the way that they're able to take those harder classes and give more to it, because a B then would turn into a 4.0 on grades. So what that does is it entices kids, students, to take these harder classes, and they're not getting penalized by it. And so we ask for a study to do that, and we're asking for this to start with the Department of Education and get this going. As you see on the bottom of on page 2, line 20, that we have the 18-19 again. I'll go through this some more. On page 3, we've added some new language in the bottom of it, that including but not limited to the review of career technical education, arts, music, honor courses, college-level courses offered to high school students, and courses offered pursuant to Wyoming Statute 212201. So we're trying to pick up the CTE. We're not trying to punish those kids that take the difficult CTE classes or classes that maybe are difficult for me, I'd say. So, and then when you turn over to page 2, that's where we added that language into that study, and we're saying that that study will also include dual and concurrent enrollment. I see there's questions, so I'll stand for questions.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm on in favor of the bill, but I will be bringing a second reading amendment to bring back a discussion from the interim into this bill. So the second half of the bill, the piece you see on page 3, I really like. So we have the success curriculum, and currently there's CTE courses that have construction math, and we're trying to find ways to make some of these CTE courses and other courses more relevant to the success curriculum where we can. So I really like that, to try to increase the capacity of those courses to meet the success curriculum, because the success curriculum and the Hathaway drive a large part of the curriculum in our schools because of the value those scholarships have. So the more that we can be inclusive with other courses, the better that is for a diversity of courses in high school. So I really support that piece. But the piece on page 2 under Romanette 7, the rigor thing, I think that's opening up a can of worms, frankly, that to try to gauge that the rigor of course A in my county versus course A somewhat like in another county, and trying to correlate their rigor, I think that's going to waste time, and I don't believe that we're going to get much out of it. I don't think the benefit out of it is going to be that great. I think the real discussion, and where this topic really needs to focus, is the worry was that there's going to be kids taking AP courses, that there'll be fewer kids taking AP courses because they're worried about the grade they get. I don't think that's really the case, because if you take an AP course, you're likely to get a higher grade point average. If you get a higher ACT score, it's likely to correlate that you're going to get a higher Hathaway. So I think if the worry is around certain courses like AP courses, then we need to tailor it to just that. I don't like doing an entire study and trying to correlate different courses for rigor around the state. I think it's going to add more paperwork, more work for districts, more work for the department. And so I'm going to bring an amendment in second reading to have that discussion. But I would urge you to pass the bill along for what's in the second part of it. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the committee of the whole amendment number 1?
I haven't moved.
All right. Call for the question.
Point of order, I haven't moved committee of the whole amendment number 1.
You did. You have.
I did standing committee.
I thought you would. Okay, so what are we?
I'll be glad to do committee of the whole amendment number 1.
I think we should.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to House or Senate file 37, and we'll explain it. What happened in drafting this bill, we realized that by changing those dates that we actually missed a class, and we want everybody to be able to have the Hathaway. And so when you look at that line 9, and it says 17-18, that was the class of high school graduates that got missed in this bill. And we want them to be able to have Hathaway, which is the purpose of the amendment. So I further ask for your considerable positive recommendation on this. Pass it.
Question has been called. All those in favor of committee the whole amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment passes. Okay, we're back on the bill. Question? All right. Question being, Vice Chairman Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question for the good Chairman of Education, and that is when we're talking about the grade point average and the rigor, how does that affect standards-based education grading? Because they're looking at going to that in some of our high schools in my district. Would there be an effect or not? And if so, what would that effect be? Thank you.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry I didn't hear all the question, but the part that I did hear was about standard-based grading and how the additional rigor would affect that. And there's a minimum base upon which everybody has to pass high school. And that minimum is down here, and we're talking about classes that are up here that are above that. And so a student that takes a class that's above that base is actually going to do very well. And as one of the speakers said earlier, a student who is doing very well in school and takes these harder classes does not necessarily mean that they're going to get penalized, because they're all obviously good students. We're just trying to entice more students to take harder classes, because some of them are not good students, but they'd like to be able to take those courses. We don't want to see them penalized for additional rigor.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a problem with what's on page 2 as far as recognizing that rigor should have something to do with the grade point average calculation. What I have a problem with is this piece down on the bottom of page 3, part of it. It says what they're asking here is to have us satisfy the success curriculum requirements in this section. The rules shall include a process to authorize and verify functional equivalence of courses specified in this section. And then where I get concerned is including, but not limited to, review of career technical education, arts and music, and honor courses. And then I don't have any problem with the rest of it. But is it just me, or is it a situation where we're kind of blurring the requirements for the success curriculum into what we have had for years in the opportunity and provincial or provisional opportunity scholarships? It just seems like we're watering down the success curriculum with those kind of, because we've always been pretty fussy about keeping those kind of peripheral classes out of the success curriculum, but yet not limiting opportunity in the opportunity side and the provisional opportunity.
Chairman Northrup.
So when we're working on this section, if you're reading that, rules shall, on page 3, line 17, the rules shall include a process to authorize and verify, and the key words are functional equivalence of courses specified herein in this section. So it's actual functional equivalence. They have to be courses that have additional rigor to them. A CNA, learning how to, not doing CNA, computer programming of a lathe, I can't remember the term it's called with that, but that would... CDC? I don't remember. At any rate, but that could be included in that functional equivalent.
Go ahead. Representative Klim.
Okay. Question.
Is there any other debate on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. Those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 37 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
All right. Senate File 37 has passed Committee of the Whole. Okay. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 53. For our consideration, the reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 53, introduced by Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, Veterans Hiring Preference, an act relating to veterans. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 53, engrossed Veterans Hiring Preference, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Blake, Brown, Court, Crank, Edwards, Eklund, Piperinen. No, Representative Laux. Signed, Representative Laux, Acting Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 53 do pass, and the bill has two amendments, and I'd like to explain those and get those out of the vote on them and get them out of the way now, if we could.
Are you going to move those?
I will move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 53.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this was a change that was made by our friends from the other side, and our committee disagreed with it. If you look on your last page, I believe, last page, line 11, if you're in the engrossed copy, it tacked on if the couple were married during the member's time of service. And we felt that that wasn't a necessity since the military person could be married to someone for 20 or 30 years when this interview process might take place. So with that explanation, I would stand for questions and, if not, ask for the question on the amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
I would say that it passed.
Thank you.
So Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on House or Senate File 57 has passed. We're back on the – do you have another one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment, number 1, to House Bill 53 and ask for your favorable consideration. And what this one is some technical things that we found out after we were through with the committee process. It removes a comma and cleans the language up, and there's nothing in this that's substantial. I would stand for questions, but if not, ask for the question.
All those in favor of the that's the Committee of the Whole, right?
Committee
okay.
of the Whole Number 1, sir.
Yes, thank you. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The amendment passes. Now are we ready for the question on the bill?
No.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Excuse me. Mr. Chairman, we haven't explained the bill nor what we're doing.
I'm just testing you.
I know. I would turn the explanation of the bill over to my good friend who is a veteran on the Transportation Military Committee.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Chairman and body, I am not a veteran on the Transportation Committee. I'm just a newbie. But this is Senate 553. It's veteran hiring's preference. It was an interim study of the Joint Transportation Interim Committee. Federal law provides for honorary discharged veterans and disabled to receive 5 to 10 preference points on their hiring interview process through the federal government. This falls in line with the federal government. Veterans preference laws do not guarantee a veteran a job. All they do is give a veteran a preference for the initial agency, such as promotions or... Anyway, the changes to the current law are suggested amendments on page 3, line 1 through 4. These are typically no longer used. We no longer use examinations under the merit system of Wyoming, so we remove those amendments by law. Page 2, line 15 through 23, residency requirements not realistic in today's mobile society. So we took that out. It contradicts our state's desire to recruit qualified employees to move to Wyoming. Page 3, the 5 to 10 advantages not applied uniformly across all state agencies. We included the University of Wyoming and community colleges into that. Page 4, current law does not adequately describe to whom this law applies, so we amended that so that it definitely explains who it applies to. And then we had archaic law on page 2 and 3, about the widow and the widower, so we amended that. If there's any questions, I'd be glad I stand for questions. If not, I ask for the questions.
Vice Chairman Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to this piece of legislation, we're also going to see another piece of legislation on veteran spouses. But it looks like this bill actually already covers that. Maybe you already handled it, but I'm reading with your amendment on page 4, on lines 8 through 11. Specifically, we're talking about veteran means a member of the United States military establishment honorably discharged from service or a surviving spouse of any such deceased member of the United States military. The way I'm reading the amendment, that's still there. Can you clarify?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe I can. A surviving spouse is a widow, and the other bill I believe you may be talking about, we're not talking widows. I'm not sure about the other bill, Representative.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have two questions. My first question is regard to top of page 3. This is the transition from a point system to a percentage system. And my first question is it additive? So the first component, what I see here, is initial appointment, 5% of advantage for a veteran over any non-veteran. The second portion is a service-connected disability, 10% or more, then there's an additional, or there's 10%. So my question is, are the 5% and 10% additive? My first question. My second question, i.e. then resulting in a 15% advantage. My second question is, when you go down to line 14 through 21, and you look at all this new language, there's no equivalency between what we've done in lines 1 through 4 or 13 and 14 through 21. I'm just not seeing that, and because this is where there is no numerical scoring system shall be given preference, but it doesn't talk about a percentage or anything, and it doesn't reference the previous section. So I think there ought to be a reference back to the previous section. Maybe one of the amendments did it. I couldn't find that it did. But it seems like there ought to be an equivalency, or this ought to be just referenced in the first part. So those two questions. Is it additive in the first component? The second component, is there a relationship or an equivalency that is somehow implied here that I'm missing? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Minority Floor Leader Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple questions as well about definitions and then Part C. So my question about a surviving spouse, and if you would follow with me this example through. So you have someone who, and let's just say it's a husband and a wife, and a husband served in the military and did so for, 4 to 6 years in his 20s. Is honorably discharged, is married, and then tragically dies in a car accident at the age of 32 after that service. So then that veteran has a surviving spouse. Is it true that under this definition of veteran, that surviving spouse is now considered a veteran? And so that you read through this whole bill and veteran, with all of the preferences that are given during the interview process, now goes to that 32-year-old kind of surviving spouse. Because that's the way that it reads to me, and I'm not confident that that's something that we really want to be doing. And then I'm curious about how you then put that into Part C. And let's just say that our veteran who had a disability of 10%, and again, kind of is and has been working, and gets a 10% kind of bump in the interview process, does now that surviving spouse, who's, let's say, 32 years old, now get this 10% bump? Because according to this definition of veteran, it means either the person who served in the military or that surviving spouse of a deceased member. And if that person has a bump, the 10% bump, then it looks to me like it's possible that that surviving spouse gets a 10% bump. So I'm curious if that's the way that this tracks through.
Is Chairman Greer. Representative Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To try to handle a couple of these questions as far as the cumulative effect from the 5 to 10%, 10% to 15%, the answer is no. The other one?
Those points don't compute in their
hiring. Points do not compute in their hiring.
Now, Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I am here's a little deeper questions on this bill. You know, we're going from veterans that have served in a conflict situation getting a preference for public employment, and I'm good with that. I'm absolutely fine with that. But now it's all veterans on this, and I want to know the discussion with that. And maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but I see the chairman's looking down, but I don't think I am looking at that wrong. I mean, I'm technically a veteran, but no one shot at me. I'm not asking for anything special. I come back and went to school and got a job. And I'm just more inclined. I just don't see opening this up or the benefit for it. I'd like to know the discussion and really why we need this particular piece of legislation.
Representative Blackburn.
I think that'll be a two-party answer to the last representative, but the way I'm understanding that what we've written here is it's for unlawfully discharged veterans. It's not necessarily ones that have saw combat or not. And I, too, served my military and came back and went to school and didn't ask for the 5 or 10%, but it's been there. And my understanding is it's been there since the 40th Second World War. That's what was the testimony we heard in committee.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm hoping the good committee can help me just rectify something I'm trying to figure out in my mind here. We have a clear distinction in the bill between public departments that use numerical scoring systems versus those that do not use numerical scoring systems. The outcomes for the veteran are very, very different depending on whether we use the numerical scoring system or not. So my question to the committee is, how many of our departments, our public departments, fit into each of those categories? And what I'm trying to get at is how many veterans are going to be impacted by the no numerical system, which gives them an absolute preference, versus the numerical system that may only give them a 10% advantage.
Representative Winters, Vice Chairman, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, every once in a while, you look at a bill and it makes you feel like, because you're going to have to stand and speak against it, that you're kicking puppies or something. And it just, that's not what I want to feel like, because my heart is so warm toward those who have served their country and the direct impact they've made in my life personally. And yet with this bill, the language that they are striking out and then the language that they are imposing in its place opens this up for an individual to move in from, say, a state on the East Coast that has had no former connection to this state, who now jumps directly to the head of the line over anybody else in this state. And when we begin to do that kind of process, I believe that to be worrisome, because it can begin that slide in, I believe, the wrong direction. This bill, as it stands, with the language stricken and with an insertion of the new language, is something that I would not feel comfortable passing, though my heart's very warm toward these individuals.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to talk about what the bill does do. It gives a 5% preference in just the interview process, not in the hiring process. So that's made clear early. There's one part of the bill that we could change to make that real clear if you wanted to. And that might be confusing to some of the people. So it's only the interviewing process. As far as it being Wyoming people, they served the U.S. military. And so we're not giving this preference to military veterans and military from Wyoming alone, to answer that question. Getting back got kind of complicated, but The the question was asked concerning the surviving spouse. Are we giving them veteran privileges? We are giving either the husbands or wives that have survived, their spouse was a veteran, they would have the same preference. It would be 5% if the interview process granted that. If they were disabled, they'd be given a 10% on their just the interview. So keep that part clear.
Representative Larson, Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the House, we've had a lot of discussions over the this year and in previous years about taking care of our military, but we really give preference to those men and women who are from the state of Wyoming who serve the military. And I really think that they have a right and I want to give them a preference, but I don't know that I want to open the door and just say, if you've lived your life on one of the coasts and decide because you moved to Wyoming a month ago that you can now have a preference to a position in a state agency. I'm uncomfortable with that. And then I would like to ask the chairman a question. If you'd go to page 3, and I'm kind of on that points and no points thing that I'm struggling a little bit with, but at the from 15 on to 21, we talk about a veteran applying for initial employment and where there's no numerical scoring system used, the veteran shall be given preference over a qualified veteran. But then the last sentence, no preference under this section shall be given to a veteran currently employed by a public department. And I'm not understanding what that really has to do with that section or what that means, so maybe you could explain what that last sentence means to me, I'd help.
Chairman Eklund.
Okay, the interview preference is only given one time. So once they've taken that advantage, they will not be given a preference a second time. And then I'm going to back up and talk a little bit more on a question earlier on the point system. We ask those questions. How hard would it be to incorporate this in with what we do in government? Because this applies only to government. It brings the institution over the hill and some smaller institutions into it. They don't do this. We ask them how well this would work, and the people that do this said, it would be easy enough to do in the hiring process. It would become more complex if the preference were given after, the interview. So after they've got the interview, they start at square one. And if they got the 5 or 10% advantage after they've been given this advantage to be interviewed, then it would be difficult to use that any kind of point system that they have. So it's only for the interview.
Vice Chairman Lindholm.
Thank you, Chairman. In regards to doing a little bit of research on the spouse aspect that we talked about on page 4, where it states, "or a surviving spouse of any such deceased member of the United States military." So talking with committee members, they pointed out to me that this is already in existing language. You can see on page 2, at the top of your page, specifically line 5. So it talks about, and the widows of members during widowhood. And so if this piece of legislation passes, I think it, because the intent was to clean up the language, it in the new language, it doesn't entertain the thought that you'll ever lose that benefit as a spouse. Whereas the old language, you lost that benefit. It was only during widowhood. So as long as you were not remarried, you had that preference. So it'll be my intent to bring an amendment to clean that up. And I was wondering if any aspect of that was brought up during committee in regards to during widowhood versus what I read now in the new language is that extending forever.
Vice Chairman Winters.
Thank you. And I want to just add on one more thing, too, to what I said before. I received a call earlier this year from a gentleman that had served for 2 years and not in any sort of active conflict. But then he noticed that the individuals that had served in an active conflict received a tax break from their assessor. And so the question was, why can't I get that one as well? Okay, so when you look at what this is doing, I think it's starting to expand things throughout the code. Potentially, I mean, in this bill it just is concerning one aspect of the code. But there is a logical conclusion, you know, I mean, reduce to the absurd, reductio ad absurdum. That's exactly what, if you look at what this is doing and follow it through, where it can affect other areas of the statutes, I think that you can see this may not be the correct direction for us to go.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? No? No? Okay, the question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Eklund's motion to, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that bill number Senate File 53 do pass. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Division's been called. So those in favor, please stand up. Please rise. Those opposed, please stand. The vote is 28 for, 29 against. The motion fails. So, okay, pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division is required, all the blah, 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 blah. Having failed a stand, blah, 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 blah. Ah, roll call. There we go. I'll find it sooner or later.
Allen.
No.
No. Baker. Barlow.
Aye.
Biteman. No. Blackburn.
Aye.
Aye. Blake.
Aye.
Aye. Bovee.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Aye. Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Court.
Aye.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Giroux.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
Aye.
Laux. No. McGuire.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup. Obermuller.
No.
Olson.
No. Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
No.
Ponell.
No.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zawanitzer.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Baker. Excused. Northrup. Excused. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Larson, Dan, or Lloyd? No. Any changes? The vote is closed. 30 aye, 28 no, 2 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, excuse me? Wait a minute. It did not. That, okay. The last vote I saw, it failed. So what happened there? Did somebody switch their vote? Okay. Senate File 53 has passed. Okay. Committee of the Whole. Minority Floor Leader Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Friends, you've been asking me about when the mugs are coming, and so I made a phone call, and the mugs will be here late this week, but we won't be here. And so mugs will be available for distribution on Tuesday. So we have here the good old envelope. You can order as many as you want, and so far the winner is Representative Jennings, who has ordered 15 of them. He has 15 friends. So unlike some of you with one or two. All right. So again, the envelope will be at my desk. They're $6 each, either put in cash or a check written out to me. And then once we've placed our order, I'll decide whether or not we'll let those down the hall get any. Okay.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 15. Chairman, let's see here. Excuse me. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 15, introduced by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, an act relating to special districts. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 15, engrossed special district budget requirements, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Zawanitzer. Noes, Representatives Edwards, Lone, Sweeney. Signed, Representatives Zawanitzer. Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zawanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm moving the committee of the whole rise to report to do so the recommendation that Senate File 15 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which I'll move after I present the bill. And I couldn't get any of my committee members to forum manage this, so I guess I'm on my own. So, friends, you have been asking me about special district budget requirements. So let me walk you through this bill. This was a product of the Select Task Force on Special Districts, one of the two major bills to come out of that task force, and then came through corporations. So just walking through the bill, basically what we're doing is just trying to put some uniformity to special districts. And then in this bill before you, it's really just in regards to the Municipal Finance Act. But so first on page 2 and 1612-202, we're just saying this act applies to all special districts, and we list out every special district in the state that would fall under this act. So think of every special district with a couple of carve-outs, like watershed or irrigation districts, because they're overseen by the courts. Hospital districts actually have a whole different set of structures on them. We had a bill to exempt BOCES from the special districts, but every other special district you'll see on page 2, 3, and 4. Probably the most important part of the bill you need to know is on page 5, lines 11 through 13, where it says, this article specifies requirements pertaining to public records and meetings of entities listed where the principal act is silent or unclear. So for a special district, they each have their own principal act, but in some cases, It doesn't give any oversight to budgets, transparency, public meeting. So this only applies in the case of a special district not having another set of enabling statutes. So walking through the bill, basically we've just put the Public Records Act into the next 10 pages. So you'll see we get through maintaining public records in 1612-303, and then we get through public meetings in 1612-304. We talk about the applicability in Article 4, and we give all the definitions of all the of what goes into a public budget. 1612-403 on page 10, we talk about how they have to prepare their budgets. This is all language from other parts of statute, as is 1612-404 on page 12. Page 13 kind of gets interesting, where we talk about the estimated revenue from property tax actually constitutes the basis for determination of the property tax to be levied for one of these special districts because they have their own taxing authority. One of the new changes we're putting into public policy in 1612-406 on page 13, we're allowing, and it's there in Romanet A, at the request of the Board of County Commissioners and prior to adopting a budget, special districts or other entities shall hold a pre-hearing with the county commissioners. And that would only be upon their request. So there's almost 700 special districts in Wyoming. The county commissioners aren't going to meet with all of them. But, you know, in cases of complaints or questions, the county commissioners can call a special district within their county to come in and meet with them in a public meeting to go over their budget before the actual presentation of their budget to their own taxpayers. Moving on, 1612-407 is limitation on appropriations. It just says they can't make any appropriation in their final budget in excess of their expendable revenue and reserves. And then the big change our brethren down the hall did on page 15 on the adoption of the budget. In the interim, we had within 24 hours of the conclusion of the public hearing, they changed that to within 3 business days. So for some of these smaller special districts, you know, they may not rush over to get a copy of their minutes and publish them and turn them in, and it may take them 3 business days. So I think that's a decent change. The other kind of interesting things, we're going to require certified copies of those budgets have to be on file not only in the special district, but they also have to be available for public inspection, and they have to turn them into 2 different places, both the Department of Audit and the county clerk of that county. Now, it used to be directed to the county commissioners. There's some testimony that county commissioners are part-time, paperwork gets lost. So we've basically done a 2-part process where the special district turns in that paperwork to the county clerk, and then we put the county clerk in charge of giving that paperwork over to the county commissioners and the county assessor. Everything for the next few pages are standard language until we get to page 19. In 91507, this is how we can examine their books. And beginning in 2018, we're requiring each special district and other entities, no matter how they're formed, they shall report to the Department of Audit and to the county clerk in their county. Now, you'll see in the standing committee amendment, and maybe it's just appropriate if I can move that at this time, Mr. Chairman, we did have one special district in the state which is insurance-related, but they operate actually, it's an insurance pool, and they operate in every county. And so they had some concern that they were going to have to turn in their budget to all 23 counties. And so you'll see in the standing committee amendment, which I'll move at this time, if a special district or other specified entity either gets to post its budget conspicuously on its website or file with the county clerk in each of the counties the special district is operating under. So at this point, I'd call for a question on the standing committee amendment. There are no questions.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman's one of
them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The rest of the bill is basically the municipal finance language until we get to page 23 on duties generally in 183402. This is where I said earlier that each county clerk shall, after receiving the budget for the special district, ensure the budget's forwarded to both the county commissioners and the county assessor. So we are putting a new burden, if you will, on our county clerks, but they are aware and they have ensured to us that they will appropriately pass that on to both the county commissioners and the county assessor. That in its entirety is the bill. You'll see in the repealer section 3, we're just repealing 100 through 105, and we're reinserting most of that language in 16201 through 205 just for cleanup language. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the Chairman of Corporations, I'm looking at page 15. So this is a limitation on appropriations. And so It says it won't expend any funds in excess of the estimated expendable revenue and reserves of the fund for the budget year. And what I'm thinking is they're going to have a balanced budget is what the attempt is. But then, so I look at the definitions on page 9, and we have, estimated revenue, but not estimated expendable revenue. The language is awkward. I just want to make sure I have a clear understanding of what was intended, and maybe a cleanup would be appropriate a little bit later on. So that's my only question.
Chairman's one answer.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a darn good question. The other amendment to this bill made in the other body was to actually affect line 4 on page 15 when they added in the words reserved. And now that the good Chairman of Minerals brings that up, I'm just going to guess they forgot to fix that in the definition on page 9. And so you probably will see a second reading amendment coming because there is some differentiation there that we probably could clear up.
Representative Larson Dan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have a question for the good chairman of Corp. On page 14, it's talked about reporting to the county commissioners about board member training. Was there a discussion had about maybe finding out how we could provide that training? Could the commissioners provide that, or maybe someone at the state level?
Chairman's one answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was a significant issue in the interim on us mandating that the board for these special districts do have some type of training. It was presented to us that between all the special districts in the state, they manage over $1 billion. And they're accountable really to themselves and, the members of within their entity boundaries. So we did put a burden that we are, including the budget, putting board member training, and we had some provisions in the interim to specify what that training would be. But as you can see in this bill, we're trying to give a very general set of guidelines at a 30,000-foot level to allow special districts to, have their own purview on what their board member training is. Of course, there were jokes, that the Predator Management Board training meant, target practice. But that certainly isn't what we're talking about. There was some attempt to say, this is an unfunded mandate that we are putting a burden on these special districts. But I think the testimony throughout the interim was really, if you're going to sign up for a board, volunteer or not, you're managing taxpayer funds, and it's up to that entity to have some type of training. Certainly the conservation districts have training several times a year. They've invited other special districts this past year to come to their trainings, at really no cost to the Department of our department that oversees agriculture or the conservation districts. We did talk about, providing some funding or mandating how the training should be, but there was no agreement, and so we just left line 9 in there that said they had to provide board training in their own purview.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. I got cut off. Sorry. I need to keep speaking, I guess. On page 18, we talk about interfund loans. I would guess that's fund loans within the district funds between funds, I guess. I kind of question why we're having an interest rate issue in that.
Vice Chairman Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is really on the top of page number 13. That particular portion of the bill starts on page 12, line 8, and is speaking of accumulated reserves or fund surplus. I wanted to come over here to page 13, top of the page, where it says money and reserves may be allowed to accumulate from year to year until the accumulated total is sufficient for specified purposes in accordance with reserve policy. And really, I want to tag off of something I heard earlier, that we have about $1 billion out there, and they're accountable really to themselves is how it was put, and I think that that is true. My question is, then, in regards to this reserve policy, how is that reserve policy set? Who sets the reserve policy? Because the accumulation of funds is where I hear a lot of discussion, at least in my neck of the woods, regarding special districts. And so I just wanted to hear a bit more about this reserve policy.
Vice Chairman Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is just on the part where we're allowing the county commissioners to veto in whole or in part line items of these budgets for these special districts, and if you could explain the need for that. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thanks. Let me try to go in reverse order. So for the immediate last question, that's already actually in statute, and we're just talking about those special districts that are already entirely appointed by the county commissioners. So that doesn't apply to other special districts that have their own elections, but in the, I think, about eight special districts where the county commissions completely appoint all members of that special district, the county commissioners do have veto authority over their budget. The question before that on specified purposes, and so, you know, this is just a tricky area when you have one level of government telling another level of government what to do. And so the operative language on page 13 is specified purposes in accordance with reserve policy. So we have some special districts out there now that some would argue, and a lot of public comment was made, that they're accumulating a lot more funding in their accounts than they need to operate, and so they just keep putting it in reserves. And we're talking seven-figure numbers with no policy on what they're going to spend that on. They're just accumulating reserves. And so as part of this bill, really they have to have specified purposes of what they do, and you're taxing people for a reason. It doesn't make sense to just build up your reserves. So they have to have a policy on what the reserves are internally. You know, we can't, well, I guess we could as a state dictate, but we really wanted to leave that up to each special district. I guess the teeth in that is that the county commissioners, regardless, can pull them in and then have a public hearing on why they're holding their reserves. And so you can't take necessarily away their reserves, but you can at least hold a public hearing and maybe you know, have it out in the open that there's this level of reserves in that special district, and maybe the taxpayers in that special district will say, you're taxing us too much if you have this much money in reserve. The first question was on interfund loans, and on 16.12.14 and page 18, and I don't know the direct answer to that one. There wasn't any public comment in the interim that I remember, and I would just tell the body I was not actually on the special district task force. The two members of my committee who served on this task force went on to bigger and better things, and so I'm kind of left holding their water on some of these, but we do have some special districts that actually report to other special districts. So conservation districts are a really good example. They have irrigation districts underneath them, but I will get back to the member on that question and see if I can more elucidate the interfund loan situation.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A comment about the reserves, and I think what the good chairman of Seven has already said is very helpful in that part of this bill is to provide some sunshine on the reserve policy. It's not dictating what it would be, but it's at least saying it should be a little more transparent. The special districts were quite protective of their reserves, and a number of them pointed out that they might be saving up for some periodic big expenditure. I remember the weed and pest people talked about every so often you may have to spray a 30-acre county for grasshoppers, and so you might have a big demand on your reserves. Some of the water projects, you know, they save and save and save and then may spend in the millions of dollars. So a lot of the reserves are pretty legitimate. But it's just good to have some transparency into how they're accumulated and what they're doing with them in the meantime.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that bill number Senate File 15 do pass. Say aye, please.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
The
bill passes. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 45, introduced by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, Liquor Dispensing Rooms, an act relating to alcoholic beverages. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 45, Engrossed, Liquor Dispensing Rooms, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Sweeney, Zwanzer. No, Representative Edwards. Absent, Representative Loan. Signed, Representative Zwanzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move and committed the whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 45 do pass. There is one standing committee amendment. I'll just go ahead and move that at this time. This was an amendment. So basically what the bill does is just take out liquor dispensing rooms and puts them onto a licensed premise or licensed building. And so on page 6, line 23, we didn't need to put the word licensed next to the word building. And so that was a cleanup that our attorneys brought to us. And while we were reading through the bill, we found a such that we could delete. And so we added that onto the standing committee amendment. If there are no questions on the standing committee amendment, I would call the question at this time.
Question being called, all those in favor of the say aye, please.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 passes is adopted. We're back on the bill. Go ahead, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And although this is a 20-page bill, it's really the same change over and over in about, 25-some articles of our law. And really what we're doing is changing dispensing rooms to licensed building. And so members, anybody who's ever been in a bar in our state, you know that we have a dispensing room to provide alcohol. And increasingly, people have found creative ways to meet the intent of the law to have a separate portion, but increasingly you're seeing that these are just a couple of poles and a different color tile, and you're calling that a dispensing room. And so we went back and said, you know, do we need dispensing rooms? Because it really is getting in the way of all of these new concepts we're having in restaurants, quite frankly, that they have their own kind of cookie-cutter designs, especially chain restaurants, and they like to design their restaurants the way they see fit. And so we went back and said, do we need dispensing rooms anymore? And the vast majority of alcohol distributors in the state said, no. It's just an impediment on business. It costs money. And it's a prohibitionary thing that time has gone by. So you'll see what we're doing is we're just allowing the local licensing authority to list premise instead of dispensing room throughout the bill, or we have licensed building. And so you'll see that change all the way through page 9. You'll see in Romanet F from 14 to 19 on page 9, we're still going to have dispensing rooms in restaurants. So if you have a restaurant liquor license, you still have to have a separate dispensing room. But if you have a bar and grill or a club or a full retail, you no longer need to. So originally this language is in another part of statute, but because we're taking out dispensing rooms from all the other type of alcohol entities and just putting in restaurants, we've basically moved the definition in F just to meet the restaurant section of statute. And the only other change outside of just cleanup language is on page 20. And this was, I guess, comments we had when you have multiple liquor license holders in the same building. You have these in shopping complexes, sporting events. And so basically we're going to allow more than one liquor license holder to operate as long as they have distinct areas within their building. And the only other thing on the top of page 22, so now that we're talking about retail stores, so you don't have a dispensing room, but if you're in a retail store that its sole purpose is for the retail sale of alcohol, you don't want anyone under 21 in that store. And so what this does is just say, you know, if you're being accompanied by a parent, a spouse, or a legal guardian who's over 21, you can enter the store with them, but we just don't want minors in retail liquor establishments for no reason. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering why the dispensing room, the archaic language, wasn't taken out when it comes to restaurants.
Chairman's wanted, sir.
So, Mr. Chairman, I believe, you know, you have resort. You have resort, you have retail, you have club. When you still have a restaurant liquor license, these are places you take your families to, and I think the historic philosophy of the body is to make these separate, and you don't want children seeing alcohol in a restaurant. So you can, any restaurant can get a restaurant liquor license with certain provisions, and I think it's just that was one step further, that if you don't want your family and watch people pouring alcohol or serving drinks, that they still have to do it away from a family-friendly restaurant.
Vice Chairman Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I received an email from back home, and they're concerned about this bill. I just wanted to hear it from you. Their concern about this bill is it essentially opens up the number of available licenses in a community quite wide. And I was wondering if that was your perspective or what maybe the intention was, what the genesis of the bill was in that regard.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. And there is another bill forthcoming. I think I can say its number is 155, and that's generating a lot of emails on increasing the number of liquor licenses. From my understanding, this bill doesn't increase that number whatsoever. This just does away with the requirement that you build a separate dispensing room in a bar that really is just a cost of doing business now that is unneeded and has brought a lot of entrepreneurs a lot of problems trying to meet the current sections of what is and what isn't a dispensing room. That can change between licensing authorities, and throughout Wyoming there's different interpretations of what constitutes a dispensing room, and it was so far off from locality to locality that they said, hey, can we standardize this language? And then the conversation said, do we even need this language anymore? And the supposition was we don't. But I don't think this increases liquor licenses.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number Senate File 45 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Bill passes. The Senate File, Senate File 45 passed the Committee of the Whole. Hans. We have a changing of the guard here. Just one second.
I could tell I wasn't sure it was going to survive. But, all right, the next bill the next file for consideration is Senate File 48. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 48. Introduced by Senator Emmerich, Farm Loan Program Amendments, an act relating to farm loans. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 48, Farm Loan Program Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Clausen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Temporary Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 48 do pass. And because the House sponsor was in the chair and has left, I'll go ahead and explain the bill to the body. So the the Farm Loan Program was put in place 1921, I believe, and the idea was it was a very useful program when interest rates were very high. And there's $275 million allocated for this, and it's a portion of the permanent mental trust fund that we talked about a few weeks ago. And the interest rate on this is set high at 8%, so as it doesn't compete with banks. And so the program's not been utilized very much lately. However, there is a subcomponent of the program for beginning farmers. And the subcomponent of the program for the beginning farmers allocates 10% of the $275 million for young farmers or beginning farmers, agriculturalists, to purchase equipment, land, livestock, whatever the case may be. And the interest rate on that is a lesser of 8% or the 10-year or the interest rate on a 10-year treasury bond. And that program's actually been quite good. And right now we're sitting with about $23 million in loans outstanding. And so there's only $27 million eligible because it's 10% of that total of the whole farm program. So this amendment came to us for two reasons, and you'll see it on page one, is the maximum amount of the loans was set at $800,000, and it was in 2008 was the last time that was adjusted. And so it's being adjusted to $1 million, primarily to deal with the inflation or rising costs of land to make it a more effective program. Okay. The second component of it you will see is in on page two, which takes this is again dealing with the beginning farmer program, and is proposing to take the 10% cap of the $275 million eligible up to 20%. And because the young or beginning farmer program is successful, they're running up to that roof. And so that is why this bill was brought, was one, to adjust for inflation on real estate, and also to allow this beginning farmer program to continue to be successful. So with that, I'll stand back and take any questions.
Any questions? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report and do so with the recommendation that Senate File 48 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 48 is passed committee of the whole. Back to the good chairman.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 100. Let's see here. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 100, introduced by Senator Scott, Limited Liability Companies. An act relating to limited liability companies. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 100, engrossed limited liability companies, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux. Noes, Representatives Claussen and Crank. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Chairman Greer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reported, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 100 do pass, and I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good Chairman of Corporations.
Chairman's wanted, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to present Senate File 100. This is really a cleanup bill to stop anything bad before it happens. So some of you remember back from 2008 to 2010, we did a complete overhaul, rewrite of all of our business and corporation statutes. And so in 2010, we updated our LLC law. And since then, well, if you have an LLC, you have to have an operating agreement. But in the old law, if you didn't have the operating agreement, and then in your articles of incorporation, you didn't have any guidance, the differences got divided or got decided by a majority of your ownership of that LLC. And so when we updated this in 2010, the new law, we basically gave everyone a 4-year grace period to update their operating agreements, because the law going forward after that said we had to have a majority of members to make decisions. Well, so what we found, even though we gave people that 4-year grace period, some actually didn't update, and they basically created a loophole, for lack of a better word, that they still don't have an operating agreement. They didn't update. And now they have this kind of interesting, weird way of still continuing to have that membership majority of the people, not of the per capita or the capital stock owners of that company. So what the bill tries to do is just create a provision. So if your LLC was formed before 2010, and it would be July 1st, 2010, the old statute still provides, in Romanet 24 there, that the majority of ownership controls. But it still says after July 1st, 2010, the current statute we have in place now applies. And so it's a really narrowly focused bill, because it only addresses the LLCs that were formed before that July 1st date and don't have an operating agreement. and there's probably less than maybe 20 of these right now in the state, but we're just preventing any kind of nefarious activity from happening in case there are some people out there who purposefully did not update their operating agreements in this grace period, and for some reason they would want to hold the company hostage. This would prevent that company from having, the LLC from having to be dissolved and reconstituted and going through that whole judicial process. So hopefully it's cleanup bill, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 100 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 100 does pass the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 59, Senate Joint Resolution 002. The reading clerk will read the resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, introduced by Senator Driscoll. Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue State Share, a joint resolution requesting Congress to enact legislation requiring revenues received by the federal government from wind and solar energy developments on land of the United States be shared equally with the state in which those developments are located. Mr. Chairman, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 2, Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue State Share, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Claussen, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, and Laux. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Committee Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 do pass. For an explanation of the resolution, I'll turn it over to the fine gentleman from House District 31.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, before you have Senate Joint Resolution Number 2, and really what this is doing is it's asking the federal government for parity. If you look at page number 2, we'll give this a quick rundown. Look at page number 2 and line number 2, and you see the whereas. And it says, whereas 50% of royalties and rents the federal government receives in connection with the production of certain fossil fuels and geothermal energy on federal land are currently shared with states pursuant to 30 U.S.C. 191. Really, as it stands right now up in my neck of the woods in coal country, where we mine a whole lot of coal, what happens is, as far as the royalties are concerned, they go to the federal government. And then the federal government gives us about half of those royalties back. But when we talk about wind and solar energy that's produced on federal land, you would think that they do the same thing, but they don't. And that's really what the whole intent of this resolution is about. If you look on line number 8 of page number 2, it says, whereas sharing rents and fees the federal government receives in connection with wind and solar energy developments on federal land with the states in which those developments are located would be consistent with existing law regarding the disposition of royalties and fees received in connection with the production of certain fossil fuels and geothermal energy on federal lands and would serve the same public purposes. And the resolution calls on the federal government for parity. With that, it's pretty simple. It's a resolution that would go to Congress, and I would stand for any questions or call for the question.
Question being called.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, excuse me. Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Just a question for the explainer of the bill. Is what kind of money are we talking about here? You know, what do they rent these things for? What are the annual revenues that go to these particular federal agencies?
Representative Clem.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the answer to that at the moment, but I can certainly get the good majority leader those answers.
Any other questions? Chairman Greer, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the majority floor leader's question, if he's at all interested in getting an answer.
That would be the Majority Floor Leader Miller. You're at the mic.
So right now, these leases that go out are somewhere around $4,500 per constructed kilowatt or megawatt, excuse me, thank you, megawatt capability. So there's some significant revenue here. We didn't get a total estimate. Also, I understood the new leases that were going out were going to be somewhere around, was it $6,900 for a megawatt hour of construction or generation capability. So it's not like we're envisioning, you know, a per acre lease of a small amount, but rather something that's tied to the production capability associated with the generation.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Greer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 100 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 100 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File, that was Senate Joint Resolution 002. I apologize. Has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 59. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 59, introduced by Senator Driscoll. Government Ethics, Clerks of the District Courts, an act relating to government ethics. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 59, Government Ethics, Clerks of the District Courts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponell, Salazar, and Winters.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 59 do pass. With the explanation of the bill, we turn to our colleague from House District 3.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, this is I think you'll find this to be a fairly simple bill. What this has to do is what our expectations are for our locally locally elected officials. Bottom of page one, you'll see a list in paragraph form of a whole bunch of folks. You turn to page two, continue with that list, et cetera, and you'll see the additional language, the clerk of district court. Currently in statute, they are not included, and certainly I think we would expect them to be held to the same standards, government ethical standards that all the other elected officials and appointed officials are in our communities, and that's what this is accomplishing. I'm not trying to pretend that this is solving anything. I think it was just an oversight that it's in the statutes, and it was pointed out by, you can see a couple of the our colleagues from the other side that kind of came across this as they were looking at things, and they decided to bring this bill. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 59 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. The bill passes. That would be Senate File 59 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 154. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 154, introduced by Senator Hastert. Sex offender registration, accessories, an act relating to sex offender registration. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 154, Sex Offender Registration Accessories, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponell, Salazar, and Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. Bill, what is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 154 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendment. For the explanation of the amendment, we have the good representative from House District 11 to be followed by an explanation of the bill from the representative from House District 3.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I did he move the amendment?
He did.
He did move it. Okay. So I just want to explain the amendment to you, and I think this is really just making sure that we cast the net that we're trying to cast. Under the current definition of offender in the statutes, it has, you'll see on the bill on page 2, lines 4 through 6, this the magical language, any other jurisdiction containing the same or similar elements or arising out of the same or similar facts or circumstances. And that applies to the current definition of offender, but under the bill as written to incorporate, what, you know, and this is kind of getting ahead of myself because I need to kind of explain to some extent what the bill does. We're expanding the definition of offender, and in doing so, we failed to include that language to our new definition of this is dealing with accessories before the fact. And so we just want to make sure that that language applies to accessories before the fact, and that's because we want to make sure that if we have individuals outside of Wyoming committing similar acts under their state laws that have similar elements under our laws, that our net reaches them as well. So I would just stand for any questions on the amendment, but I'd ask for your, I guess we're asking for your favorable consideration.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has passed or has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Anybody have any? Oh, there you are, Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, ladies and gentlemen, I got to give you a little context to why this bill is before you. So this has to do with the Sex Offender Registry. And we spent a lot of time earlier in the session talking about the Sex Offender Registry and the fact that we're trying to fund it and how do we keep it going, et cetera. But this is actually regards to the folks who are on the registry. And in particular, this is a class of offender that is not on the registry. And the storyline is this. For a significant number of time, the interpretation of current law, of our current statute, was that the folks that were convicted of an accessory before the fact or aiding and abetting, that's the, another word for accessory before the fact is aiding and abetting, one of these crimes, and these crimes are sex offense crimes, as you see in 6-2-702-356, they were on the registry. They were on the registry. They were required to register upon conviction. And about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a hard look taken at our current statute saying, you know, actually, they are not supposed to be registered. And folks that were on the registry were taken off the registry. Now, it happened to be one of my constituents whose child had been a victim of one of these folks, and all of a sudden now that individual who had been on the registry and there had been an ability to keep them away from this young people, now they all of a sudden had access back into these folks' lives. And the Sex Offender Registry, folks, is a way that we both put the individual and society on notice that these folks are of danger. They're convicted of a crime, and that crime is of a nature that we really do want everybody to be informed. And so this this father has been enduring. Now the children are of age of majority, and so they're making their own decisions. But while they were not, this father had to endure the component that his children were now being placed at risk again because of this glitch, loophole, whatever. So the request here is simply to make those folks convicted of aiding and abetting, or as current law, in the right legal terms, is accessory before the fact, to be placed on the sex offender registry list and to be held to a standard that society has asked, that we need to know. We need to be informed of that. So it's fairly simple. It comes out of a real circumstance from my community, and to this father's pain and anguish. He believes his child was harmed after these people, harmed again, excuse me, again, victimized again after these folks were removed from this registry. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd ask for your favorable consideration and certainly be glad to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Salazar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a member of the judiciary, I heard this testimony. It is a good bill. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 154 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 154 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 47, introduced by Appropriations, State Institution Revenue Accounts, an act relating to state institutions. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 47, State Institution Revenue Accounts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, and is it you or him? Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with a recommendation that Senate File 47 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from the land of the winds.
Representative Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, Senate File 47 is another one of the bills, one of several that we've seen this session, where we're trying to put into statute a number of provisions that we had continually put into the budget bill to take care of some issues on a regular basis. And what this addresses is that our state institutions like the State Hospital, the Retirement Center, Life Resource Center, the Pioneer Home, they will sometimes receive some sources of revenue. It could be from a private insurer carriers. It could be self-pay. It could also be gifts bequeathed to the institution for specific purposes. But our statutes, as they are currently written, require for those revenues generated in that instance to return to the state treasury. And what we've been doing in the budget bills has been putting in language that says that the institutions would be able to use those funds as long as they're used to for the well-being of the prisoners or the patients or whoever served there or for capital maintenance projects. And so what we've done in this bill is what they've done in this bill is they've gone in and made that statute where we don't have to do that on a regular basis. So on page 1, section 20, section 1 in Section 2510.129 goes in. This is going into the state hospital, and we're making it known there that they can those types of funds can be used to defray the cost of involuntary hospitalization. So, if an individual was involuntarily committed, a Title 25 patient, and he had private pay insurance, they could use that to defray that rather than return it to the state treasurer. It could also be if there was a gift or something given to the state hospital, they could use that to for safety issues. And if there's a project, a construction project that the superintendent would like to take care of that's in excess of $200,000 on that property for the well-being of those individuals, he would have to get approval from the State Building Commission. And that has to, they also have to, the department has to provide a report back to the JAC each year. Then in Section 2, we go down and we make we go into Section 9 and we point out that public institutions now, the legislature may provide for deposit of monies into a special income account. And you'll see from time to time On our budget bill, you'll see an SR, special revenue, that comes out of these types of accounts. And this is authorizing that, like we've been doing out of the budget bill. And if you go over to page 4, they make that specifically, we in Section A, that used to cover the retirement center and the Pioneer Home. They deleted the retirement center out of subsection A and made a new subsection B that covers retirement center. So A is now the Pioneer Home, so that they would be able to use funds like that for things around the Pioneer Home and the retirement center. They would be able to use them for the needs that they would possibly have at the retirement center. So again, that's a cleanup that has kind of been driven by has been requested and asked to take place by Management Council, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 47 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 52. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 52, introduced by Appropriations. Fund balance definition, an act relating to administration of government. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 52, fund balance definition, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it does so with a recommendation that Senate File 52 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative at the
Speaker Pro Tem Burkhart.
Joining up 287 and I-25.
Excuse me, I thought you were done. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, just like the just previous bill, this is another one where JC is pulled out of the budget what really should be in statute, which is how fund balances are calculated. If you look on some of your, for example, the Goldenrod, it has a fund balance in that, and this describes specifically how that balance is calculated. This used to be a footnote in the budget bills. Again, we've tried to remove as many of these footnotes, they're really laws, and put them into the statutes, and this is another one. On page 2 at the top is pretty much where it starts. It adds new section Romanet 22 to 921002 and defines what those are under all of these fund balances, unappropriated fund balance, unobligated, unencumbered fund balances. Notwithstanding cash or fund balances reflected in the state of Wyoming's comprehensive annual financial report means. And it means, I'll just go through these real quick, and so those of you who've never heard this before know, the fund cash and petty cash balance from the comparative balance sheet, which is run within 5 business days following close of the prior fiscal year, less the fund balance reserved encumbrances, meaning money that is charged to that fund but not yet spent, which, again, is run within 5 days following the close of fiscal year, less the remaining unspent appropriations. When we appropriate money, the agencies don't spend it all at once. Sometimes it takes a whole fiscal year. And then less fund reversions. So if money reverts, you take it out. Less restricted cash as determined by the state auditor's office, which is cash you cannot really use for one reason or another, plus the net accounts receivable due from the federal government or other entities, plus mineral severance tax, if any, to be distributed to the fund, plus sales and use tax, if any, to be distributed to the fund, plus federal mineral royalties, if anything, to be distributed to that fund. And that's what it does. It just tells you how you calculate a fund balance and makes it official. With that, I'd stand for questions. Seeing none, I call for the question.
Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Nicholas's motion that when Committee of the Whole rises to report, and do so with a recommendation that Senate File 52 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 52 has passed this Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. Excuse me. I think I'm jumping ahead here. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Okay.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
February 14, 2017. Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 36, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 37, amended, and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 53, amended and further amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 15, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 45, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 48, recommended do pass. Senate File 100, recommended do pass. Senate Joint Resolution 2, recommended do pass. Senate File 59, recommended do pass. Senate File 154, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 47, recommended do pass. And Senate File 52, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
Representative Allen.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Congratulations, Chairman Allen. Thank you. Reports from standing committees.
Senate File 32, introduced by Judiciary, Peace Officer Recordings, an act relating to public records. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 32, engrossed, Peace Officer Recordings, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponell, Salazar and Winters, no. Representative Baker, signed. Representative Kirkbride, chairman. Senate File 113, introduced by Senator Nethercott, felony fleeing or eluding police, an act relating to regulation of traffic on highways. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 113, engrossed, felony fleeing or eluding police, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Ponell, Salazar, and Winters. Noes, Representatives Baker and Pelkey. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. Senate File 51, introduced by Appropriations. Approval of Water Funds Transfer, an act relating to water. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 51, Approval of Water Funds Transfer, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. Senate File 91, introduced by Representative Hicks, Small Water Projects, an act relating to water development. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 91, Engrossed, Small Water Projects, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Clausen, Gray, Hunt, Larson, McKim, Steinmetz. Noes, Representatives Blake, Haley, and Henderson. Signed, Representative Gray, Acting Chairman. Senate File 14, introduced by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivision, Imperative Liquor Licenses, an act relating to alcoholic beverages. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 14, engrossed inoperative liquor licenses, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. No, Representative Edwards. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Senate File 92, introduced by Senator Pappas, Local Governments Plan Review Authority, an act relating to fire protection. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 92, Local Governments Plan Review Authority, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Senate File 138, introduced by Senator Pappas, Certified Public Accountants, Amendments, an act relating to professions and occupations. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 138, Certified Public Accountants Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
We have one message from the Senate.
Message from the Wyoming Senate. Message number 281, concurrence requested. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 113, Medicaid Waiver Program, Military Personnel. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Members, we are going to move into the explanation of Senate action on Senate File 1. So this basically works like a long privilege of the floor. So how we'll do this is the Appropriations Committee, I think, has divided the workload. Chairman Nicholas will start us off. I see him. I think that's the way they've done it. And so they will. You should have some handouts. And so what we'll do is go through their amendments, the changes they made, and then we will have time to, you know, ask questions at the end. And so we anticipate this might take 30 minutes. 20 minutes of explanation, maybe, and then tomorrow morning at some point, I'll appoint a conference committee for House Bill 1, Senate File 1. So with that, Chairman Nicholas, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, in your box, you'll see a handout that just went out about 15 minutes ago. It's kind of a thick one. On the front of it is a standing committee report. And this standing committee report is what we will submit to the Senate after we're done submitting the standing committee report to you and walking through the explanation. So this is really, it's kind of a, it does two things. It's a technicality that's required in our rules that we present what the Senate did on the budget bill. And then once we walk through this, then it goes and gets registered, and then that goes over to the Senate for tomorrow morning. That allows the Senate then to act on our actions, and then they appoint their committee after our actions. And so That's the technical steps that we're going through. And you can see what this is, just an outline of the amendments that we're going to talk about. Then if you go to the next page, this is a synopsis that breaks down. It's by identical bills, related bills, and then unrelated bills, or excuse me, amendments from the Senate. And we don't really go through at this time an explanation telling you the differences between House amendments that we just which we just finished up on and the Senate amendments. All we're doing here now is explaining to you in kind of a brief fashion what amendments passed either through second or third reading in the Senate. So we'll have the various members at the mic to kind of go through their sections so that we kind of divvied up. And it, you just start off by going to the Senate amendment. So you start on the right, and if you want to follow us on the little cheat sheet. And by the way, attached to that are the actual Senate amendments, if you want to have those or look at them. So if you go to the cheat sheet, we're going to start off with Senate third reading amendment number 27. And then it tells you who the sponsor was, a corresponding House mirror amendment, because that you only have that because that's the only mirror amendment. And then on this one, Representative Schwartz will explain what they did in the Senate side. And then once he does that, then we'll move over. We'll just move down to the next one, which will be Representative Walters, the deal with military, and we'll just walk down. And so it's broken up to three sections, identical, related, and then unrelated. And then for each section, we go from the first agency down through the highest numbered agency. So that's why how they're ordered and so on. And as we kind of walk through it, you'll understand it. And we may give a little description about it, but really this is just a formality where we kind of tell you what they did. And so, and it's not really a question and answer, but we'll get to that when we get to the committee, when we walk through the committee changes when we get there. So we'll just start with Representative Schwartz and walk you through what the amendments of the Senate were.
And I would, to aid this, the speed of this delivery, I think this is, again, like a large privilege of the floor. So I think you members can just cede to each other across the mic, and I'm going to sign out.
Okay. Goodbye, Mr. Speaker. Okay, I won't waste any time. Third reading amendment 27 of the Senate deleted footnote number 2, which is on page 21 of our budget, regarding the property tax relief program. It's the same as the amendment we approved.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving on to Senate second reading amendment number 1. This restores the JAC cut to the Youth Challenge Program to a full $500,000 that was reduced in JAC, and it also removes the corresponding footnote that said if there was a class in progress, it would still have the chance to finish, and so it removes that since the money is there based on that. So moving on to the next person.
Thank you. The third one is to Agency 51, the Livestock Board, and this was really a mirror amendment to ours, except that their first try at it was only half the mirror, so that's why it's under there, under the related rather than the whole. And this was to add some money back in and change law enforcement to livestock investigators and change the dates, all of which we did here.
So the next one down the line, it's in the box in the middle of the page, Senate file, third reading, amendment number 32. This had to do with section 300, and that's the budget balancer portions of the section 300s. And what the Senate did in this third reading amendment, the second reading amendment, they overdid their first, they struck their second reading amendment, went to the third reading amendment. They appropriated $104.5 million from the LSRA, and move that over into the BRA, and then from those funds, they appropriated $15 million from the BRA to Title 25 obligations and $19.2 million for the potential relocation of inmates at the state penitentiary. Then going on to the next box, that's Senate file, second reading number amendment number 27. That's all major maintenance. They added $200,000 from the Tobacco Trust for repairs at the community college, Western Wyoming Community College. That was then amended again. They did a couple funky things, but and if you go up to the far right, you'll see that they replaced, they moved money around because they thought that the tobacco fund wasn't the proper source for the funds to go to the community college. So then they moved it into general funds, and then we pulled it out of general funds to take it back in. So it was just a where the money was coming from. So that's what they did all the way through Senate Third Reading Amendment number 18.
Third Reading number 14 changed the payroll report from what was in the budget, from the payroll report to the payroll and associated position table, and that was the extent of the change on 14.
Senate Third Reading number 20, down almost towards the bottom of the page, is a little bit more complicated. They reinstated all of the money to the Pipeline Authority, which was $200,000 that the JAC had reduced. They took that money from the Department of Health. They then made the Department of Health whole using tobacco funds in that regard. So it was a three-way swap, you might say, but in the end, tobacco funds were used to do that. Moving on to Third Reading Amendment number 26, this was similar to an amendment that a good representative here in our body brought, but this is one that eliminates vacant positions within the Department of Agriculture and then moves that money that is saved through the elimination of those positions to predator management. And so we saw that yesterday in our third reading amendments, and that's what those do.
Third Reading Amendment 22. Adds a footnote directing the Professional Teaching Standard Boards to expend $20,000 to ensure its online credentialing services operational by July 1st, 2017. ETS has created a system. This is just an attempt to kind of push this along so we get this credentialing service up and running.
On page 23 of your bill, the Senate moved second reading amendment number 4, and it moves $193,000 from general fund from the business council to the DEQ to replace a position in land quality that was eliminated by JAC, and then it added another position that was removed for the NRC that adds $56,000 of federal funds. Again, that creates two new full-time employees.
Senate second reading amendment number 3 takes $150,000 from the governor's office in general funds and moves it to the infrastructure authority, again, as general funds, and adds a footnote directing the infrastructure authority to expend $250,000 general fund total to facilitate monitoring of local and federal issues affecting coal. This is new money from the governor's office plus existing money of $100,000.
Second reading amendment number 5 eliminates a $386,600 appropriation from water development account 1 to game and fish for aquatic invasive species. This was a pass-through monies. It was a grant from our federal friends.
Second reading amendment number 7 adds a footnote directing the Department of Insurance to examine Joint Powers Board coverage for property or casualty losses for Wyoming government units and to provide a report. This is a study footnote.
Second reading amendment number 8 adds a footnote specifying that not less than the $3 million shown there in general funds and the $3.2 million in federal funds won't be spent to fund services under the comprehensive shall be spent to fund services under the comprehensive and support waivers prior to completion of the rebasing. This is the money that we appropriated last year, which we're waiting for Medicaid to get handed down to them. Third reading amendment number 7 adds $1 million tobacco funds to specify expenditures and a footnote to specify expenditures for the prevention management services. And then second reading amendment number 13 added a footnote specifying funds for mental health and substance abuse units in the Department of Health may not be used to pay for Title 25 obligations.
So going on down for the page, but when you look at this, it looks like we didn't do a whole lot in 3 or 4 days, does it, when you kind of condense it all down. So Senate file third reading number 23, amendment number 23. You'll all recognize this. This is the nice discussion that we had with regards to whether or not the community colleges and UW should be exempt from the Section 320 overall budget reductions. The Senate added back in to the general funds the funds for the community colleges and also funds for UW. And then they added, if you see that down on page 109, some absolutely superfluous language saying that they we wouldn't eliminate any positions, even though that was already in the amendment already. So so that's what the good folks over at the Senate did.
In Senate third reading, amendment number 11, the Senate, they decided to eliminate the footnote number 12, which asked the university to work with the city of Laramie to close a certain street there. And so they deleted that footnote in Senate third reading 11.
Third reading amendment number 12 was the Senate did add a footnote specifying that school districts may not use state funds to sue the state. You will recognize that we did not pass it in the House.
Second reading amendment 19 is the cut of 91,491,575 in school foundation dollars from the education program, and this cut is regardless of whether any of the bills pass. So we have out there House Bill 236 and we have Senate File 165, so it's structured so regardless of whichever one of those would pass, it would still result in additional dollars being cut up to the $91.5 million in fiscal year 18. And then the third reading amendment 13 basically ensures that this cut is done equitably, you know, using the current equity formula. So that's, and if you want more detail on this particular amendment, I have some.
So the next, we're now on page 3, I believe, down to Senate file, third reading number 34, Senate file, third reading number 17. Looking at these also, the first one affects Section 320. This adds the Department of Correction, or exempts, excuse me, the Department of Corrections from that 75 position freeze that we have in Section 320. And then if the next one, Senate File 329, this deleted that $3 million that the Joint Appropriation Committee had stuck in using cigarette tax dollars in the event that that is approved. And as you recall, when we talked earlier, that they did 15 out of the LISRA that they moved over to the broad to kind of compensate for that.
Senate Third Reading Amendment 16, Section 332, adds $50,000 in penitentiary permanent land funds for the Management Council to secure a second opinion of the structural engineering reconnaissance study submitted to the Task Force on State Penal Facilities and requires a report.
Mr. Speaker, the last two we saw together. Second reading amendment number 22 and third reading amendment number 15. They took two amendments to get what we managed to see in one amendment, although we did not pass it. So I guess they put a lot of work into that. This is the one where we were going to direct the executive branch to reduce general fund salaries by 2%, and then there was various wordsmithing on their part. It failed in the House.
And you also might note on that there was a technical correction. When we debated it on the floor, the number that we used was that would be a $10.2 million reduction in general funds. After further review by the LSO, that was actually a 9.2 reduction that was involved with that particular amendment. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes your House Appropriations Report and evaluation of the Senate's adopted amendments. And so the next protocol is I would move that the House approve as accurately reflecting the amendments as submitted and passed by the Senate.
Before we, and we will take a vote on this, and what we vote on, members, is really the accuracy of this first page where it says Senate File 1 and then the Standing Committee Report. So we will vote on not whether you agree with it or disagree or any of it, but it's that we receive the information and then it's logged into the journal. But before we take that vote, I would ask any members, if they have any questions, just come to a podium and you can ask a member of Appropriations any specific questions. Okay. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think other people might be interested in more understanding about the $11 million and $79 million that the Senate took out of education. And so I'm wondering if the good member of Appropriations could give us a little bit more there.
What member? Representative Summers.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. So if you look on your little summary sheet, page 2, and you look over there and it says school foundation program, and then you go further right, it goes $11,725,681. And then below that it says foundation specials, $79,765,884. I think for ease of capturing the $91.5 million, that $79 million represents the amount of categorical grants that exist outside, I guess what we'd call the block grant. And so they grabbed that, and then they grabbed $11,725,000 out of the school foundation program itself. And then of course they have a subsequent amendment to make sure that after that's been grabbed, that then that cut becomes proportional based upon the equity in the programs to ensure that recapture and entitlement districts are funded appropriately in the cut. So the cut is based back upon the equity piece. And so that's kind of how that was done. And once again, if either one of the bills were to pass, remember in the end the cut would be $91.5 million. If House Bill 236, let's say it had, I can't remember the exact number, but let's say it had $36 million worth of cuts. Well, you'd get the 36 out of the House Bill 236, and then whatever it took to get up to that $91 million would come also out of the school foundation in a proportional amount. So that's kind of how that would work, or vice versa on the Senate file. So, and I have, if somebody wants even more, I have an explanation from Matt Wilmarth that I would be willing to send to anybody that wants to read Matt's explanation of that as well.
So the net effect of that is no matter what happens, if under the Senate amendment, there will be a $91 million cut in fiscal year 2018. So if 165 passes, I think that's roughly a $49 million cut. In addition to that, you would add up an additional cut out of the school foundation to total up to $91 million. So the whole gist of the amendment is there will be $91 million cut out of school foundation financing in fiscal year 2018 to begin basically immediately and it would go into effect when the bill went into effect. If that helps.
Mr. Chairman, and I, so just so people, I think fiscal year 18 begins July 1st.
Correct.
That's school year 17-18, so next school year. Okay. Chairman Madden.
I just wanted to get clarification. In 236, did we, I could probably look this up, but we didn't take any cuts for fiscal year 18, and didn't they all start in fiscal 19? No?
I believe $32 million would come out of fiscal year 18 and when 236, roughly that number.
Representative Summers, do you have anything?
Mr. Speaker, that's correct. We have the
The non-personnel EB was about $22 million. We had $9 million in elimination of the ECA. That would have all took place in 18, so it was about $31 to $32 million, somewhere in there, if my memory serves me correctly.
Representative Kinner.
Thank you. A question for our good chairman. So on page 3, down at the bottom, amendment number 22 talks about a 2% salary cut. And I thought we'd talked about that they had amended that to be 4%. So is that right below it, 15? If you could explain that, please.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, the 2% was the same number in the amendment that we had on the House floor. It was a reciprocal amendment. They were identical. The difference is that you have to apply the 2% all in 1 year for fiscal year 17 and 18. So it amounted to a 4% cut for 2018. And then it would have continued on for 2% and 2% in 2019-2020. So
thank you.
Any other questions by members? Okay. No further questions. Thank you, Appropriations Committee. So again, we need to vote. And again, it's not whether you like or dislike the amendments. That's our conference committee, and then you'll have votes on the budget as we work through the conference process on concurrence, just like any other bill. But we're voting on this page to accurately reflects the Senate action. So the motion then is to adopt the standing committee report on Senate File 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. That report has been adopted. And as I mentioned earlier, I will appoint the conference committee tomorrow morning, and we'll refer this report to the Senate. I believe their timeline is to review House actions to House Bill 1 and tomorrow morning. And so potentially then we could have our conference committees meet perhaps tomorrow afternoon, evening. So with that, the next order of business is really on adjournment. And so I'm going to call Mr. Majority Floor Leader. And then committee chairman, have your announcements ready.
Mr. Speaker, your general file tomorrow will continue on the same list. The first five bills will be Senate File 56, 62, 66, 67, and 69. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 15th, 2017.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet upon adjournment February 15th on Wednesday to consider three bills, Senate File 167, Workers' Compensation Discount Rate Modification and Credit, Senate File 89, Presumptive Disability for Firefighters, and Senate File 150, Long-Acting Reversible Contraception. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, your conference committee on Senate File 6 will meet tomorrow, February 15th at 12:15 in S-18.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30. It was announced earlier 8, but we're going to meet at 7:30 to consider interim topic proposals in our committee. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll start on two bills, Senate File 26, Engrossed, Game and Fish Licenses Confidentiality, Senate File 169, Migratory Bird Refuge. But also, Mr. Speaker, and I hope you're listening, because on Thursday, we're going to have a joint Travel Rec Committee meeting in Senate, S-27 at 12:30. And so that's when we'll do the interim topic. We'll decide which interim topics we do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number four, education, will meet Wednesday upon adjournment in House 38. We'll do Senate File 50, Civics Educational Program, Senate File 145, UW, and Community College Board of Trustees Chairman, and Senate File 146, Community College District Board Voting.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet upon adjournment to study Senate File 64, Engrossed, Crash Report Confidentiality, Senate File 140, I-80 Master Project Master Plan, and Senate File 109, Engrossed, Auto Cycles. We will not do Senate File 170, Engrossed Unmanned Aircraft.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning, Wednesday, February 15th, at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room, H37. We will continue with Senate File 156, Engrossed, State Government Efficiencies, and then we will hear Senate File 127, Engrossed, Exterior Residential Storm Damage Repair Contracts.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Appropriations will meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. to do re-referrals. We'll Senate File 24, Engrossed, Senate File 123, which is School Nutrition Pilot Projects, Senate File 131, State Revenues and Expenditure Reviews.
Any other announcements? Okay, before we take the vote to adjourn, the Wyoming Cowboys are playing our... It's Beat the Sheep Week. It's we got the CSU Rams. Sheep. Meh. So, if we... You've heard the majority floor leader's motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed say no. The House is adjourned until Wednesday, February 15th at 10 a.m.